This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels trading broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others due to various factors such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors. Such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore, investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniels Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniels Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.
Hello and welcome to the Inside Commodity Futures Podcast. My name is Craig Turner, and I'll be driving along with you today. I'm a broker here at Daniels Trading. I'm also author of Turner's Take newsletter. So we're going to talk some grains first, switch on over to livestock, finish with some energy. Lots been going on. We're going to try to do these more regularly now, and sometimes John will be on with me, sometimes I'll be in solo. So let's just see how this goes. And also, we're also looking forward to actually having some people in industry and doing some interviews this fall. So I think that'll be real exciting too. So first thing we want to talk about is the grain markets, and something that I've been writing about a lot is harvest pressure. So for corn and soybeans, harvest pressure, we see it usually the most as we are in the month of September. If you look at the seasonal charts, usually we make these harvest lows towards the end of September, and then the pressure comes off and we can actually get a little bit of what's known as a post-harvest rally. If you read other newsletters in the business, you may even see that written about a lot. With wheat, it's a little bit different. Usually with the winter wheat, right around now is where you see the harvest pressure come off, and then it starts to go higher. Again, not every year, but that's just the seasonal tendencies or the seasonal pressures of harvest. So again, it's not always like that every year, but just in terms of and other outside factors can always affect what's going on. The dollar or crude oil is a great example, or the Fed. But in terms of right now, normal year, not much going on macro-wise, you'll start to see the harvest pressure relieved from wheat, and at the end of the month, corn and soybeans. What's interesting about corn is we may have put in our seasonal low at around 315 at the end of August, beginning of September, and December corn. Usually, that's early. You usually don't see the annual low be made that early. Usually it's sometime in the real depths of September, but I'll tell you what I think happened there. The revenue insurance price for corn this year was right around 380, okay? Now, why is that important? When farmers take insurance, which is basically sponsored by the government, they might say, okay, December corn, 380 is your revenue insurance price. Let's take the average farmer yield. The average farmer yield, let's just call it 170. Back then, it would have been 175, what the USDA was saying, but let's just say it's 170. And you say, okay, we'll have 170 bushels per acre, at 380, you get your total revenue. But then you also want to say, okay, well, I'm only taking 85% revenue insurance, which is what a lot of these guys do, anywhere between 50-85%. But I talk to a lot of farmers, and if they do revenue insurance, a lot of them are in that 70-85%. So let's say you took the max you can get, and you said, I'm going to, basically get revenue insurance for 85% of my production. 85% of that 380 insurance price comes in right around 315, 320, based on your average farmer doing 170 bushels per acre. And so when we got down to 315, 320, we made a bottom, and we made a pretty sharp bottom. Now, there are other things going on in that. I should say more of a reversal. We definitely made a reversal. As for if we made a bottom, we'll find out in the rest of the year where prices go. But it was definitely a reversal. And a lot of that short covering and that reversal was, I believe, big traders, funds that were heavily short this market, realizing we are now below the 85% revenue insurance price for the average farmer out there. And, you know, that's a reason to lighten up. So in my mind, 320 should be the floor just based on the revenue price alone. Obviously, things can, I mean, this crop can get huge. Maybe we don't export anything. Maybe around the world, they have the greatest, you know, bumper crop ever in Ukraine and South America, and it sends our prices lower. But I don't see that happening right now. I think 315, 320 is going to be some pretty big support just by that insurance revenue alone. So if we get above 345, now December corn is at 337. If we get above 345, that is going to be breaking some of these pretty big resistance points. And you can start saying, technically, if they have a big short out there, I think last I checked, Commitment of Traders was about 70,000 short. That's going to cause some short covering. We were seeing buying coming in from the export market just this morning. Mexico was buying U.S. corn. As far as I know, the United States is going to be a pretty big player in the export market, at least until South America comes online. And I know Ukraine, former Soviet Union, has corn too, but U.S. has real low prices here compared, especially compared to years past. So I think we're going to continue to start seeing demand there. If yield comes down from 175 to 170, like a lot have been predicting, you know, maybe carry out for new crop now is instead of 2.4 billion, we're closer to 2.3 or 2.2. Start getting some real export demand coming in. And, you know, maybe all of a sudden we're at 2 billion again. 2 billion is still a burdensome supply carry out, but at least we can get over 350 at that point. And, you know, if there's issues in South America during October, if let's say they get planting delays, you know, they usually plant soybeans first down there. So let's say you have planting delays. You plant soybeans second, and then you plant corn. I mean, you plant soybeans first, then you plant corn. You're really pushing back the growing season, and that means we're going to have more export demand instead of going to South America earlier. It's going to it's basically extending the marketing season for the United States, hopefully expanding export numbers and therefore expanding basically bringing down the balance sheet. So you can start seeing reasons now why you start going over $3.50 or $4 in October or into November, and then what happens if we start talking in October, November about less U.S. acreage because soybeans may be more profitable. So right now we're looking at a range of corn prices. I know it's going to be wide, but over the next 3 to 6 months, and we do this a lot with hedgers and telling us where we think our price zones are going to be, probably around 320 to 450. And, to get to the 450, you got to have some serious issues like speculation of less acres in the United States, weather delays in South America, higher exports, maybe crude oil rallies, and you get some more, the ethanol margins get better. But just looking at where prices are around 340 and such a big short position in the market, it seems like to us, or me anyways, it's more upside than downside in corn right now at these prices. Just based on the current fundamentals, that's something I write about for Turner's Take, and my new website for Turner's Take Ag Marketing is coming out soon, and it's going to be updating that also. If you look at soybeans is probably the most bullish, has the most bullish scenarios or bullish cards in the deck for a potential catalyst for a rally than those others. I still think that we're going to see a bigger soybean crop. I would not be surprised eventually if the USDA says we have a 51.5 or a 52 yield in the soybean market. We get all these reports. I mean, I get a ton of emails every day from all these fields all over the Midwest giving us updates on what the yields are like in certain fields. Now, one by itself doesn't tell you anything. It's one little dot on a map of massive amount of acres out there. But when you start seeing these things day in after day, hour after hour, and you start piecing together, trends, it does seem like to me, I'm not surprised now that the USDA brought down the corn acres from 175, and I wouldn't be surprised if we got closer to 170 when it's all said and done, just based on these reports we're getting in the field. But everyone seems to be having some very good soybeans. Not everyone, I shouldn't say that, but there are a lot of reports where soybeans are the best they've seen, and it tends to be getting better reports for the soybeans and the corn out there. So that's why I wouldn't be surprised if we saw soybean production go up. If we did add on a half bushel to bushel and a half on production, maybe we add 40 to 120 million in the stocks area, but also old crop stocks have been coming down. We've seen some very, very strong demand in September. So it could be an offset. You know, we could add 80 million bushels to supply, you know, for new crop, but then take off 50 from such a strong old crop demand and have maybe 30 more in commitments that come through and then making everything a wash. So, you know, soybeans in this $9 range, you know, where we're trading $9.40 to $9.80 right now makes a lot of sense. I wouldn't be surprised if we came down again between now and the end of the month as these reports continue to come in. The trade is really trading, I think, the supply numbers. The demand numbers. You know, we have been seeing a lot of demand, and we've also been seeing some rains that have delaying new crop. And the significance there is old crop stocks are getting tighter. We are going to have a lot of new crop, but if we're going to have delays in harvest, which we could just because of all the rain in the Midwest, that'll just make old crop a little bit tighter, and that'll put a little bit more buying pressure on the soybeans. So that could be a short-term deal. As we get into the thick of soybean harvest, I really wouldn't be surprised if we saw some kind of 30 or 40 cent break lower. But at that point, when you get into October and then in November, just like corn, you can have higher demand coming in for exports, where the United States is pretty much the only game in town, especially for the bean market. And if you do get delays in South America, that's going to even draw more on the new crop stocks, you know, for the basically in the export demand. So soybeans, when we were doing our season, you know, our basically our ranges of writing our report now for our outlook for 2017. And, you know, right now, you know, worst case scenario, just based on our supply and our numbers, we're going to 850, 860, unless we get a total shocker in yield and acres in the new crop for South America and also for the United States the following year. And then the upside, you know, I mean, you can really make a case where we have, we come into this season with new crop stocks around 300, 350. And if there are issues in South America or big delays and you start getting stock numbers into the United States, into the 200s with a threat of going to the 100s, if the United States doesn't have a big crop, you can all of a sudden make the case of a wide range of soybean prices, 850 to 1250. And people might say, well, how can soybeans range $4 like that in your economic forecast? And it's because only two places really produce soybeans. And if one of them has a problem, then we get tight stocks fast. While with wheat and corn, a lot of countries produce those, especially wheat. I mean, they grow wheat all over the world. So if the United States has an issue, it's not as big a deal because other nations can pick up the slack and sell. Same with corn. You know, there can be a lot of corn out there. They produce it in, you know, Australia. They produce it in Africa. They produce it in South America. They produce it in Europe. But soybeans, the export game is basically, you want to export soybeans, you got to go to Brazil or United States. If you want meal, you got Argentina in there too. And that's really it. So when you got issues, you can the supply gets tighter and the prices can move more drastically, right? All about scarcity or the risk of scarcity. So, and while the wheat, you know, so, and then when we're looking at wheat now, I talk a lot about the wheat spreads and the storage expanding and, you know, seeing what's going to happen with like Dece March wheat with the VSR. If you don't know about those kind of things, you're happy to get in touch with me or read some of my old newsletters. I talk about it a lot. But it just seems like with wheat being able to go on loan now, with the harvest pressure now coming off the wheat prices seasonally, maybe corn and soybeans can get a boost and such a huge short position in the wheat market. There seems to be more potential for the upside than the downside in wheat just based on the current fundamentals, supply and demand. I'm not saying wheat's going to be all of a sudden a bull market, but it's been beaten down pretty good and there's a very sizable short position in there. So just something to keep in mind on as we move out of this harvest situation at the end of the month. If there was one thing I'd be really looking out for, though, is basically soybeans. Keeping an eye on the production levels, how much the USDA is going to increase it, and then also how much old crop we're exporting. And corn. Corn could be a story if we close above 345 and really start seeing some strong export numbers, and the USDA keeps on lowering that yield. So all stuff to take a look at, you know, for farmers. I know a lot of you had to sell some cash. You may want to take a look into re-ownership. You know, Deastie's corn at a 40-cent carry, probably not a bad way to start if you're looking for something just a little bit more conservative. But, you know, call in and let us know if you want to know more about things like that. Moving on to livestock. You know, it looks like we may have a counter seasonal rally on our hands. You know, a lot of people talk about livestock saying this time of year, you know, there's usually pressure on the market. But when you consider all the animals that have come to the market, I mean, basically what we had is we had 2 years of a huge supply. I mean, and then the market, you know, it takes 2 years to, we had no supply. So we had 2 years of really no supply. And then we finally, you know, this year, get all that supply to come back. You know, it takes about 2 years in the life cycle of cattle to really replace it. And what happened is markets do what markets do. We had too much, and the industry has done a really good job of slaughtering a lot of cattle, bringing a lot of meat to the market. And even though it's depressed prices, what it has done is it's starting to flush out the system. So there won't be a backlog in the fall, or let's really call it like in the winter and into early spring. So I think that's why, you know, after really the cattle kind of spiked, we are going up higher now. There is going to be strong resistance in, let's say, October cattle at around 114. We're at 107 now. So there's a lot of resistance levels in the moving averages and trend lines, you know, coming up here. But I don't know. I think I'm more bullish now on cattle than bearish on this. The industry has done a really good job of cleaning up a lot of the excess animals and beef out there. So that's something I would definitely keep in mind. And a lot of the ranchers we work at, I would keep an eye on that too. Finally, just in the crude oil, I've been talking a lot how, you know, since we've been in the 50s here, we've been kind of bearish on the crude oil situation. You know, every time OPEC talks about how they want to limit production, you know, it sounds all great and they can all get in a room and talk about limiting production, but, you know, it's there's no honor among thieves, really. And, you know, if you're in a cartel trying to fix prices, but you also want to make as much money as you can, what you get a lot of times, what we did in the past, was they'd say, oh, yeah, well, we'll cut production, and they look over to their neighbors and say, okay, you're cutting production, I'll cut production. And what do they end up doing? They turn around and produce more, hoping that the other guy will actually keep his word and cut production. So that's the way it's usually been. Maybe this time they get actual serious and they really do cut production. But in the past, the only nations that really cut production was Saudi Arabia. And they did it for political clout. You know, they were the big producers. They were the ones that had the big political clout in the Middle East. And they would say, hey, you keep on producing. Saudi Arabia, we're the ones who are going to cut down on production. You know, don't worry about it. You keep on doing what you're doing. And when Saudi Arabia said, we're not doing that anymore, you're stealing our market share, that's when OPEC really stopped working, you know, for production cuts. So unless, you know, everyone gets on board, or, you know, if, you know, I don't see it happening. If you want the two big dogs in the group to cut production to really make things, that would be Russia and Saudi Arabia. But I don't think Russia and Saudi Arabia are in a position to do that. I mean, they're, you know, they're tighten their belts too. It's not the gravy days of $100 crude oil. So, and every time we get to 50, you can see more production coming online. You know, we're already seeing that there are more rigs, you know, now being added to the system than instead of taken out. So crude oil, we're still looking bearish pressure, you know, as it's getting to trend lines to the upper side. We're expecting some resistance and it'll work its way down. Also, in this time of the year, seasonally, the crude spreads do have bearish pressure on them. And that is something else we're writing about. So check out the newsletter, Turner's Take. You also check out the website, turnerstake.com. And, you know, if you have any questions, if you want us to address something, send it on over and we're happy. All right, thanks very much.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels trading broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation cancellation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore, investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniel's Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniel's Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.